It's often the little things, small behaviors, that can change our lives. That's the power of a financial edge. I'm Ed Meek. I'm a financial advisor with a passion to help you retire early, save more, and live better. Welcome to Ed's Edge, the podcast to help you live the life you've always wanted.
We're going to start off today with a quiz.
Quiz? I wasn't ready.
I know you weren't. That's why I'm doing it.
Okay.
Which one of these four things is a myth?
All right.
Eating carrots improves your vision.
My mother told me that.
Human brains. We only use 10% of our human brains.
I believe that.
Cracking knuckles causes arthritis.
Ooh, good one.
And crossing your eyes too much will permanently keep them that way. Which one's a myth, James?
I'm going to say, even though I believe it, I'm sure it's not perfectly accurate. I'm going to say humans do not use 10% of their brains.
Correct. In fact, they're all myths.
That's a trick question.
Yeah.
Well, they're all myths. So carrots, human don't use 10% of our brains. Wow. Okay.
Arthritis, knuckles. Well,
why are we talking about this?
The reason we're talking about it is because a myth is a widely held but false belief or idea. And you and I come across these in the financial world a lot. Do we not?
We do. We hear a lot from a wide variety of people. And what we wanted to do today is debunk some of the most common myths that we hear in the financial planning world and really personal finance world as well.
Now, we come across a lot more than this, but these are some of the common ones. So I'll start it right off now when it comes to Social Security. Social Security, you can claim it once and you better do it right. But a lot of people are worried that it's going to run out of money. Social Security is going to run out of money.
If you Google today, Social Security running out, you will receive a plethora of articles about the timeline and all the concerns. I think it's 2034. Don't hold me to that. But the reality is, yes, Social Security is in fact a legal Ponzi scheme, dare I say?
I mean, you know, you could kind of put it that way.
Money's coming in, it's being funded from workers, and it's being paid out to those in need.
There isn't like a big pot that they're paying you out of. They're paying out of from what, you know, right hand, left hand. But why is it not going to collapse, do you believe, James, from what we know?
So a couple of factors. The most important one to me is the fact that just under 50% of retirees are living on Social Security alone. And so people concerned about those benefits being severely cut, imagine what would happen to those half of those retirees. Our economy would collapse if they couldn't have that money anymore. They're homeless.
Well, there would just be the rippling effect of being able to buy things. And our economy thrives on people spending money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not just that, but that's huge. And so, you know, it's similar to a lot of the other benefits that the government has that creates stability in our country. It's, you know, not a perfect analogy, but it's kind of like FDIC insurance at the bank for your CDs ensures that you're going to get your money. And so Social Security is another area, but they're not going to stop Social Security.
They'll probably restructure it, right?
Well, I mean, they're going to have to restructure it. If they do a couple of things, they start making people pay more into Social Security who are working. That will help solve some of it. And the other one will be they might make me take it a little bit later than I originally thought, and you maybe even a little later than that. Truthfully, if they just did that a couple of years, it actually would solve it. Now, there's a lot of voters out there who wouldn't like that, so that might be kind of hard, but there are ways that it will most likely last. So we believe that it's a myth that Social Security is going to run out and it's going to be a bad thing.
Yes, absolutely. All right, point number two. This has been talked about certainly amongst younger generations, but older as well in the last 5-10 years. They call it the latte effect. What is...
I love lattes.
The latte, right? You love them.
Well, you hear me making them. We got a little coffee. There. Yeah, that's right. They're nice. I like the milk part.
Yeah. Well, according to this myth, Ed, it is preventing you from building wealth.
Well, it's not because I have my own latte maker. You're talking about if I went down the street and bought a latte from my half of the sky. Oh, by the way, it was Ed's Food for Thought. Very good place.
Yeah.
I'm not buying... Unfortunately, $5 lattes there every day.
That's right. Here's the myth is if you, which this math is true. I fully understand that, but I want to provide a little bit more context to it. So, you know, the latte effect is preventing you from building wealth. It costs $5 a day for your latte. If you took that $5 a day and invested it every single day, instead of buying that latte, you put it in the stock market and you earn, let's say, 9% a year. And, you know, I'll pick a time frame, you know, you're 25 years old and you decided I'm not going to buy the latte and I'm going to do this for 40 years. I know these are extreme numbers, but that's $600,000 with compounding for that $5 a day and a 9% rate of return. And that's what people are talking about is instead of buying that latte, you can have so much more money later on. But here's the counter argument that we have to it is so many of us pay attention to just the little spending habits that we have, some of those ways we can cut corner and make a little bit extra benefit. And we lose sight on the big, what I call the big rocks, the most important pieces, like the quality of our house, the cost of our house, the cars we drive, the colleges we send our children to, the timeline on our retirement, you know, some of our fixed expenses that we ignore.
Yeah, those huge purchases we've seen. A good example of this would have been a while ago, but in 2008, when the stock market collapsed, you know, we live here in Wheaton. It's a very nice town. It was unbelievable how many houses were up for sale. Now, part of it was people were losing their jobs, but another one was people bought as big of a house as the mortgage companies would allow them to buy, and they didn't have that flexibility. And so we have to keep everything into context. You know, you don't have to buy the higher end car. You can buy a really nice car. And so we just see that if you can manage those, you can still have your latte. And by the way, do you know how many times we said latte? We must have said latte. I don't think I've said latte that many times in a 5-minute conversation.
Until now.
Until now.
That's right. Yes. And so this, the moral of the story to your exact point, Ed, allocate your money in towards things that you and your spouse, if you're married, value, and be true to yourself and what you value and enjoy, right? So if you have a sound plan and you've allocated towards, you know, enough towards the future, enjoy today. Go get that venti latte. We give you the permission
mocha,
as financial advisors
espresso,
to do that.
With a little bit of almond milk, something like that.
Sounds good.
All right.
All right. Point number
three.
The
next one, myth number three, renting versus owning a home. It's a good investment to buy a home, and we should buy a home above renting, right?
Potentially.
What are the pros and cons of each one?
So it ties me into a story of my sister. My sister purchased a home about a year and a half ago, and she was renting for a while. And she was really chomping at the bit to purchase a home even much, much sooner than probably she could afford. And so we talked through a lot of that. And what I told her is, look, renting at the end of the day is buying time. In this case for her, it was buying herself some time to build up enough of a down payment to obtain a valuable mortgage, a mortgage that makes sense for her. And it fortunately worked out perfectly, you know, despite this wild housing market. She got the home that she wanted. Now she's in the ball game. She's building wealth. Mm-hmm. We recorded a podcast with the real estate agent talking about that. So certainly, I think that was episode 36 around real estate. Take a look at that if you're interested in that game. But at the end of the day, renting is not always a bad thing, contrary to popular belief.
In fact, the cash flow perspective, usually you're better from a cash flow perspective, because when you own the home, if you don't own one yet, you know, there's all these additional expenses. There's the real estate expenses. Real estate taxes, home improvements. There's just a variety of different things. And so you can wipe a lot of that out when it comes to renting. And this decision also isn't just a pure financial decision. Right? We feel different when we're in our own home, and we build a lot of memories when we're in our home. And there's a lot of benefits that you get by that. And it doesn't build huge wealth, right? When you pour all that money into it, but that's not the reason that you primarily do that. I mean, we discussed that in the podcast that we talked about it, but you also have to take into account the time frame. And this is where I think one of the problems that people run into is they want to hurry up and buy a home, or they move to an area and they want to get a home.
All my neighbors are getting homes. I need to buy one now. Well, right?
Also, they might do it a little too quick. If you ask them and said, well, are you pretty sure you're going to live here at least 5 to 10 years? If they're not 100% sure, there are a lot of costs to get a home. And so you want to make sure you're going to be there for a while.
Yeah, that's when it becomes a little bit of gambling, kind of like the stock market in 1 or 2 years. You know, it's anyone's guess what can happen in theory. But over time, we know the stock market does incredibly well, just like a home.
Wait a minute. That's myth number 4.
Go figure.
Yeah. Myth number 4. The stock market's really like gambling. Now, we've talked about this before. Well, today in one day, there's a 50-50 chance or something like that. If it's going to go up, 54% chance it's going to go up. But we love this chart. We're going to pull it up again. It's the gambling versus the stock market chart. And if you look at gambling and all the different ways you can gamble, there's less than a 50-50 chance. If you look at the right side of the chart, you can see this is the S&P 500. Big, broad index of U.S. companies. As you can see, if you leave your money in there for more than a year, 3, 5, your odds are great at making money. 5, 10, 15 years, you're way in the 90% chance. It's one of the best ways to grow your money. So, sorry to say, but the people who say that, they're pretty ignorant when it comes to it thinking it's gambling.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, especially when you talk about the stock market, a diversified basket of stocks, right? So
not like a penny stock or just one stock. It's a diversified basket that represents the US,
broad market and the economy.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it makes me think of just some funny scenarios around day trading. I read a stat a couple of weeks ago. This is where it can become gambling. Just to play the contrarian here is, you know, you're day trading. Meaning buying and selling stocks each and every day, there is 3% of people who are professional day traders actually make money. 3%. It was 3.2, I think it was.
Well, they're not so professional then, are they?
Right. Right. And so, you know, we want to be careful around chasing that within the stock market. You know, it's not gambling if we're disciplined and diversified. And that's the important topic here. So moving on, point number 5. There is only one correct way to build wealth. That is a myth. Go ahead.
There isn't?
There's not. There's many ways to build wealth.
Hmm. Well, Dave Ramsey thinks there's only one way. Actually, Dave Ramsey's got a lot of really good things
to say. He does. Dave Ramsey is extreme one way. Someone that many of you may have known from a couple of his books is Robert Kiyosaki. He's extreme another way, where he loves debt and leverage out and, you know, borrow money you don't pay taxes on. And he talks a lot about that compared to Dave Ramsey, where, you know, the debtor is slave to the lender, right?
They're extremes.
Very extremes. And they both built a tremendous amount of wealth despite contrary beliefs. And so I think that's a case in point that there is not just one way to build wealth. And part of our job as financial advisors to understand what type of wealth matters to you? Is it purely financial? Is it time? Is it a variety of other factors? And how do we create a financial structure to build the wealth you want to play your game, not your neighbors?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a cookie cutter way of doing it. You know, I think I saw one other financial advisor one time recently say, you know, we don't have an agenda of implementing what we believe in every single way is the best thing for you. We find out, what are you trying to accomplish? And we'll see ways that we can help you try to accomplish that. And with some people, it's certainly not like getting credit card debt or anything like that, but it's going to be okay having certain kind of debt, in our opinion, to be able to take advantage of other things.
That's right. That's right. There's a foundation, but you know, anyone who says this is the only way, run fast the other way.
Mm-hmm. Myth number 6, you need a high income to be wealthy. To eventually become wealthy, you're going to need a high income. You need to make a lot of money. And that isn't a myth. We've seen that. In fact, we see a good chunk of our clients didn't necessarily make tremendous amounts of money in order to build the nest egg that they have.
Yeah. There's pros and cons to every financial decision we make. And I can think of a number of different stories. One in particular comes to mind of a lady who passed away a couple of years ago with several million dollars, making in today's dollars about 50, 60 grand a year for their entire working career, and passed away with millions. Now, they were very frugal. There are a lot of cons that she gave up with her husband. But, you know, there's many different ways, again, going back to building wealth. You don't need a high income necessarily.
It's about your behavior. It's about taking a percentage of what you make and setting it aside, and doing it as early as you possibly can. And if you do that and let it accumulate, I mean, the power of compounding, of letting your money compound and compound, makes a huge, huge difference.
That's right.
And that's how people become wealthy, is doing that.
Well said. And all of this ties to probably one of the most important myths here that we've heard many times, is the fact that being wealthy makes us happy. Now, I think a lot of us in the public would agree it probably doesn't, but some argue it does because they have all this and they're flaunting it. I want to provide a slightly different spin on what wealth accomplishes for us. Wealth gives us options. It gives us the ability to have many different choices, which is certainly a positive. It also provides us a significant amount of convenience. You know, we can take the limo that picks us up real quick instead of having to wait for an Uber. You know, we can fly first class instead of, you know, in the back. And all that's a little bit more convenient, right? Pre-check, things of that nature. But it doesn't, that's a component of happiness. It's not the only form. And Warren Buffett, who is, the third or fourth wealthiest man in the world, he defines wealth as the amount of close relationships he has. And that's pretty profound. It's not coming from someone who has unlimited
money.
Well,
I think we all agree that when you have good, deep relationships, friendships, they are, I'd trade them for anything, right? And so I would not want to fly first class and be a loner and not have any friends. I would rather not be able to fly and have close friends. Now, those are extremes. And so hopefully we can accomplish, you know, somewhere in between. But certainly that, you know, wealthy isn't going to make you happy, but it does make life convenient and comfortable. And those are not necessarily bad things.
That's right. Good. So those are our top myths that we hear from our clients, the public, what have you. Hope you found it helpful. Let's shift over to Ed's food for thought.
All right. I got a good one this week. Just happened recently. So, as you know, I've talked about how, first of all, I love all meals, but I do like breakfast. Having a good breakfast. I know it is. He orders breakfast, and there's a breakfast place right down the street, and he orders breakfast and just eats it for lunch sometimes. So.
That's right.
Not the pancakes too often, but, you know, no, usually
I save that for myself.
A good old omelet, right?
Yeah.
So anyways, about a month ago, I'm going into Chicago and I'm meeting a friend early in the morning because that's the only time we can get together. And I look around, I look at Google Maps and I'm like, man, there's not many places that are open at 6:30, but I found a place and it had all these stars and it was on Wells Street in Chicago, 1100 Wells Street. It's called Hash Brown Cafe. Now, you used to live in the city. Did you ever hear of this place or no?
I haven't. I know Wells, which is right south of the Gold Coast.
It's like 1100. Yeah. So, so I looked it up and basically it's been around for like 20, 30 years or something. And I was like, I got to try this, you know? So they had like six different hash brown dishes and you just literally just order this big old thing of hash brown. And so I ordered one that had like a bunch of stuff in it. And it was awesome. I mean, it was like one of the best, it was really like a loaf, like a hash brown loaf. So anyways, it was an awesome restaurant. If you're in the city and you like breakfast and like hash browns, you got to go there. And,
what did you order?
Just this big loaf of hash brown.
That was it.
That's it.
I thought that was like a side you're talking about.
Right.
Wow.
Well, they have those and you can get it with, I wasn't getting a really big breakfast, but
I see.
You could get that probably in a couple of eggs or something like that, but it was certainly enough of substance by itself. So.
Must be what they're known for.
Go figure. Yeah, exactly.
Hence
that was
name.
Awesome.
Wonderful. Well, thanks everyone for watching.
Yep. Thanks. See you next time.
This podcast represents an assessment of the market environment at a specific point in time, should not be relied upon as investment advice, and is not intended to predict or depict performance of any investment. Any specific recommendations or comparisons that are made as to particular securities or strategies are for illustrative purposes only and are not meant as investment advice for any viewer.